listening to Joe Barnes Online. We're talking about building businesses, creating an income for life, and having the freedom to work from anywhere in the world with passion and energy. For want of a better phrase, grabbing life by the proverbial balls. My name is Joe Barnes. Let's make it happen. Hello, hello, hello. How you doing? You are listening to Joe Barnes here on Joe Barnes Online. And it is my job to investigate, explore, and uncover what awesome entrepreneurs the world over are doing to create and run fantastic businesses, changing the world one person, one business, one entrepreneur, one project at a time. And today, I am delighted to speak to the lovely Lauren Clement, who is the creator of Ultimate Business Propeller, Rocket Launch, your personal brand. Love that. Rocket Launch it. And Lauren is an award-winning personal branding specialist. She is also the winner of umpteen Stevie Awards for women in business. And she has a history working in world-leading advertising agencies. And we're not talking just about any agencies here. We're talking about Saatchi and Saatchi, Ogilvy and Mather, Clemenger BBDO, brand manager for AXA. She's also owned her own advertising agency, and she now runs her own personal branding consultancy, which is the Ultimate Business Propeller, and has also created the award-winning Authority Rocket program, which has helped hundreds of professional service providers around the world to become well-known, well-paid, and wanted. Lauren is a great friend of mine. She is extremely clever and very, very good at what she does. So if you want to know what you need to do to become well-known, well-paid, and wanted, then listen up. Enjoy today's podcast. Hey, Lauren, how are you? Welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm awesome, thank you, Joe, and so excited to be here. It is so cool.
Thank you so much for coming on. I'm also super excited.
It's been ages since we last spoke, so I can't wait.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm really excited to have you on this particular podcast. I'm loving, I don't know if I can say this, but I'm loving the concept of my own podcast.
It's very exciting. And in reality, when I thought about it the other day, I thought, well, why haven't you done it before, Joe? Seriously, such a good idea.
Yeah, I know. So today we are going to set about doing some serious inspiring work here, Lauren, because you are a very inspirational lady, which is why I really wanted to get you on this podcast. If anybody can really kind of inspire other entrepreneurs to step out of their comfort zone, take action, and really be who they want to be, it's you. So I would really like to start and ask you, when people ask you what you do, how do you answer them?
It depends what location I'm in. There's it's funny actually, Joe. I was born under the sign of the monkey, and I can be a little bit cheeky, which you will already know about. And in fact, I've done this on a number of times, and I dare anyone who's listening to this, you have to try this out. I'm only going to share this with you if you promise me that you're going to try this out next time somebody does this to you. So if somebody meets you and says to you, "You look really familiar. I'm pretty sure I've seen you somewhere before." You have to say to them, "Do you watch much porn?" All right, so there's the challenge. Now, I was once, someone once said that to me, and I was at a very posh function. I was dressed up and people in suits and ties and things at Parliament House here in Australia. And somebody said that to me, and for a split second, my brain said to me, "You know where you are, don't you? Just maybe not a good idea to." And I did it anyway, and I had people spluttering and laughing, and it was really hilarious in this very inappropriate place. But you've got to do that. Somebody said to you, "You look really familiar." Just ask them if they watch much porn.
That is such a great answer.
It's a great way to break the ice. So I dare you, now that you've got that tip, if anyone's listening, that you have to use that next time. So whenever anybody asks me, though, I always say, I'm an international award-winning personal branding specialist, which is a mouthful.
I was going to say, that's a hell of a mouthful, that, isn't it?
There was a theory, Joe, that I can speak underwater with a loaf of bread in my mouth. I'm pretty sure people have said the same thing about you, although it might be a bag of marbles rather than a loaf of bread. But Yeah, I think the whole purpose of an elevator pitch is just to get somebody to ask you for more information. So it's not there for you to sell yourself or to sell your services or to convince them that they need to work with you or to impress them. It's just to get them to ask you another question. One of my clients, he calls himself the client orchardist. And he introduced himself, "Hi, I'm Ross and I'm the client orchardist." And the nicest thing I like about his story is we haven't even created his logo and his branding yet. And he's already building a brand just by introducing himself as the client orchardist.
So now, what do you think? I have to ask, what's an orchardist? I have no idea what an orchardist is.
So what do you think a client orchardist would do?
Orchardist, as in like an apple orchard.
Correct.
Okay, so he would be a client picker maybe?
Correct. So he helps you get more profitable business from the clients you've already got, harvesting your existing clients.
Is he a keen gardener then?
He has done some work on orchards and things years ago. He's a friendly Kiwi, which is like me. But yeah, his whole thing is about nurturing and fertilizing good relationships with your long-term clients. And more often than not, people go out there looking for new business constantly. Mm. And he talks about, look, before you go and do that, let's look after your current clients first. When was the last time you spoke to your client database? When was the last time you thanked them or had something personal that you could share with them?
Yeah. Tell me your mouthful again. How do you say it?
I'm an international award-winning personal branding specialist.
So, of course, the next question has to be, what does an international award-winning personal brand specialist do?
Do, absolutely. And that's perfect because it means that it now gives me the opportunity to say, well, I help people who sell professional services who want to stand out and be seen and be found and be noticed to become well-known, well-paid and wanted.
Fantastic. And what got you into that, Lauren? I mean, what kind of started you down the road of personal branding?
Like all good things, it was a bit of an accident, actually, Jo. I moved country, which, given that you talk a lot about people running businesses from anywhere in the world and creating amazing businesses that create huge impact wherever you go in the world, you'll understand what it's like when you move country and you move your family from one country to the other. And seriously, ours was a quick hop across the Tasman from New Zealand to Australia. So it wasn't a big cultural shock or anything like that, but it's a massive opportunity for you to have a bit of a sea change. And previous to that, I had worked with world-leading advertising agencies for 25 years. I'd run my own agency. I'd worked as a brand manager in a corporate role. And I wanted something different. I didn't want that. I mean, you've probably watched Mad Men and everybody thinks it's very glamorous in advertising and so on. But seriously, it's a game for young players. They eat you alive. It's a little bit like working at Facebook or Google. And they create amazing spaces and they have internal cafes and gyms and things. Because guess what? They don't want their staff to go home. They don't want you to have a life. They want you to so love being in your work environment that you never leave. And I'd live that life. I'd live the 24-hour-a-day crazy, stressful life of working in advertising and working with brands, and I wanted something different. And I wanted to work with people. I didn't necessarily want to work with big corporate brands or retail brands or product-based brands. To me, that was easy. It was a bit of a no-brainer.
You worked with some huge brands, though, didn't you? You worked with, like, you know, your Saatchi and Saatchis and stuff. I mean, these weren't just your little brands, were they?
No, absolutely. They were big corporates that I was working with. And AXA and, you know, Lion Breweries and Best Telecom. What's it called? It's now called Spark in New Zealand. It was called Telecom New Zealand, Zealand Post. Lots of the financials, the banks, Westpac, ANZ, did all work with the big brands. So it was nice to work. And I guess looking back, Jo, the most interesting and creative time that I had in those years was when I was working with entrepreneurs, startups and small businesses who were wanting to create something bigger than themselves, and that's when they looked to create a brand. And we had so much fun and we could be way more creative and more authentic and personal with what they were doing than any of these big corporates. I mean, they had way more money, way more budget, big marketing departments, you know, that was massive to have that stuff. But to be able to work with somebody who's wanting to make a bigger impact than themselves, that was really cool.
Okay, so let me take you way back, Lauren. I want to imagine you're lying on a couch and I am wafting a...
I'm not telling people how old I am.
I'm wafting a watch in front of you and I'm taking you all the way back. Tell us a little bit about...
My eyes are feeling heavy.
Tell us a little bit about your childhood growing up at a YMCA camp. Tell us kind of how that came about, why you were growing up there, and what were some of your biggest lessons from that experience?
So my mum and dad are English, and they moved from the beautiful area of Bournemouth, Poole and Bournemouth within the south of England was where they grew up and lived. They moved to New Zealand as £10 poms, which basically meant that they paid £10 or around that amount. They were put on a boat and moved to New Zealand because of their skills. My dad was an engineering draftsman, my mother was a florist, and they wanted to have people move to New Zealand who had skills to get the economy going. That was back in the 1960s. Now, so different from Australia, where they sent lots of convicts, New Zealand's much more of an entrepreneurial, startup, innovative mentality that's embedded into the culture. Not that Aussies are bad. I love my Aussies. They're great fun. But that's the difference in the culture, if anyone wanted to know. My dad got a bit sick and tired of engineering. My mum stopped working, as you did in those days, to have a family. And she had three daughters, myself, my older sister, and my younger sister. And my dad got to a point where he was really loving the stuff he was doing around. He was also a Sea Scout captain, so he was teaching kids about sailing and living outdoors and all these sorts of things, and he also ran a jamboree for the Scouts one summer, and we all left home and moved with him to where they ran the jamboree and had great fun over that short period. And he loved that so much that when a job came up for him to become the director of a YMCA camp, he jumped at it, and he got the job, and he gave up engineering. And moved us to a place called Hunua, which is right at the foot of the Hunua Ranges in South Auckland. And we were now the camp kids. So for 9 years, I lived at the YMCA camp. My dad and some amazing people who have become lifelong adopted family members now were part of that management team. And I got to meet over 300 new kids
Now,
every week
from
of
what
every
age to
school
what age?
holidays.
You say 9 years. From what age to what age?
9 years. Well, I think we moved there. Oh, my memory's really bad. We moved there when I was, I think I was, I know I left when I was 13.
Okay.
So I would have moved there when I was
About
seven,
four.
eight, something like that. Does that make sense? My
No,
maths is shocking.
about 4 if it was 9 years.
Oh, well, that's got to be, okay. Well, it's got to be older than that. I think I was about 6 years old. I'd
Okay.
started school in New Plymouth, where there were lots of earthquakes. Moved to Hunua. Yes, I would have been about 6 or 7. I must have left when I was closer to 15,
So
which is
pretty
quite right.
formative years then, yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely, big formative years. So I grew up in the country. We didn't lock our cars, didn't lock the house. We spent all our days swimming, riding our mountain bikes, up in the bush, making bivouacs, messing around. And yeah, every week of every school holiday, there'd be 300 new children would arrive on a Saturday. All the buses would arrive. All the leaders and junior leaders and staff would be there, and everybody would settle into the camp, and then would they'd be there for a week, and then on the Saturday they'd jump on buses and leave, and in the afternoon another busload of kids would arrive for whatever it was, the 6, 8 weeks of the school holidays and Easter camps and whenever the school holidays was on.
Okay. And you talk in your book, Selling You. Lauren has written this fantastic book, Selling You, How to Become Well Known, Well Paid and Wanted, your personal branding practical guidebook. And I'll put a link in the show notes as to where people can go and find that book. But you talk about how you developed a unique ability to mold and adapt your behavior because of all those kids arriving. Can you talk to us a bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess I've always wanted to be a bit of a pleaser. And I think this is something that a lot of women I meet and I work with also have the same thing, where you want other people to like you. And I seem to have that from a very young age. And I could, yeah, exactly that. I could mold my personality and my approach to people, depending on who they were, to try and make them comfortable so that they would like me. So if it was a kid who was homesick, I'd talk to them, give them a hug, introduce them to my pet sheep, try and make them feel at home, look after them. If it was a leader and I wanted to appeal to them, I'd talk to them a little bit more like an adult, or I'd perhaps show them a part of the camp that they didn't know existed that might help them with being a better leader. If it was an adult who was there as the camp nurse or the camp cook or somebody else like that, I'd have a very adult conversation with them. And I guess my parents always encouraged us to be interactive. And always involving us in conversations so that we'd be talking to all sorts of different people. And even today, I have no hesitation in talking to anyone, be they a child, an adult, an MP, a dignitary, a celebrity, doesn't matter. To me, in my mind, you're all the same. You're just a person I need to get to know to find out, do we have some common ground? So I could do that. I guess 9 years of doing that certainly makes it easy for me to do it today. But the issue I found with that, and I put that into the book, is that I did lose myself a bit in that. I lost the ability to just be me. I always felt like I had to adapt to be something for somebody else.
Yeah, I like the you say here, this really resonated with me, Lauren, because I kind of felt the same way when I was at school, and I've never really understood why. But you say, although I had lots of friends, I never had a best friend. I never really feel like I fit with any particular group of people. And all through my school years, even though I have absolutely no issue with speaking to people, I'm super sociable, very confident. I was once likened years ago to a social chameleon. Yeah. Can talk to anybody. Yet I never really feel like I kind of fit in to any group. So let's just explore that for a second. Why do you feel that was the case with you? And what do you feel has kind of, if there even is a solution to that, whether you should feel like you fit in or not, what do you feel is either the benefit or the negative of that?
It's a good psychological conundrum, really, isn't it? Because you want to have the confidence to be yourself, but at the same time, I've got a saying, life is too short to work with horrible people. So making sure you're around the people that you can not only connect with, but you get a mutual benefit from is ideal. And I do go into this later on in the book around personal communication styles. I am out and out an eagle. And an eagle is all about, look, I just want to get in, get it done, get some results, have some fun, but get on with it. Give me the facts and figures. Don't mess around with the politeness. I was never one to hang around the water station and the corporate offices and listen to gossip and on how are you and try and break the ice. I'm just straight into it, which can come across as being quite blunt and uncaring, which is not what it is. It's just the way my mind works. Also, I think I have a bit of ADHD and I get bored really easily. So if I'm meeting with somebody and they don't connect with me instantly and they're not engaging and I can't seem to connect with them, it's hard for me to put too much energy and effort into that relationship. Now, that sounds really shitty, actually. That sounds like I'm not a nice person, but it's the way that my brain works. It's the way that I like to be communicated with. And I work really well with people who cut to the chase, who want to get results, who are very driven, they're entrepreneurial, they excite me. Creative people who are going out there making a difference, they're exciting. People who want to talk about gossip and did you hear that they did this and this is what needs to happen first. And I just haven't got the time and haven't got the patience for it. I think, Joe, I've taught myself more of that as I've gotten older. Age is a wonderful thing, isn't it, when you look back on your life. I know when I did DISC profiling years ago, which highlighted the fact that I am this driven personality, it scared me a little bit that I was like 90% in this quadrant and nothing of anything else. And I took it on board as a bad thing at the time. In hindsight, with a bit of age, I've looked back and gone, well, hey, that is me. I can live with the fact that that's the way I like to operate. But I have taught myself what the other communication styles are and how to pick up whether you're an owl, eagle, peacock or dove, which is in the book, and how somebody else likes to be communicated with, to make it just a little bit easier on them to deal with the fact that I'm very full on. A few people have said to me, you're quite intimidating, Lauren. And I don't know whether to take that as a compliment or not.
I'm definitely a peacock.
Yes, very sociable. Yes.
I would say in my 20s, I was more of an eagle. But I think as I've got older, I've become much more of a peacock. I'm much more laid back now than I was when I was.
And you want to know about people. You want to know their story and absolutely. Whereas I don't want the story. I want, what is it you want? How can I help you?
this is all in the book. This is Lauren talks about four personal communication styles and they all have different character traits, and it's very interesting actually to go through it and have a look. But let's just delve into something else, Lauren, while we're talking about this. and I hope it's okay me asking you this question, but I'd like you to just talk a little bit about your relationship with your dad,
Yes.
because you talk in your book about you constantly having to try and get his approval and his attention, and I'm interested in how you feel that has affected who you are and your personality traits now.
Absolutely. I think, and it's interesting, it's something I've come to terms with. I've had a really, really good mindset coach while I've been building my personal brand, and this was one of the things we had to go through. And I actually did a I did a retreat with her, and we broke through this, and I forgave my dad, and it's been awesome since then. I can now think of my dad with no negative emotion at all, which is brilliant for me, of course, but I'm sure brilliant for our relationship as well.
So what did you have to forgive him for?
For feeling like I was second best, for feeling like he ignored me, like I was never going to be good enough, all those sorts of feelings that I had. And I think if I look back, it was because I was comparing myself to certainly to my older sister, who I always thought was the apple of his eye and the firstborn child and so on. She always got the best stuff and so on. It was that I'm sure I've got that middle child complex that, if my older sister wasn't going to take it, I wanted some of the limelight. But it did come back to that desperate need to be loved, to be wanted, to be liked, to be accepted. And I wanted it so much from my dad more than anybody else, and I never got it. So I think it's stupid, isn't it? I don't know whether anyone else resonates listening to this, that you hold on to that stuff for far too long. I should have dealt with it way back in my 20s and 30s, and I would have had, I'm sure, a far better relationship, certainly with my dad, but certainly with my family. And it's taken me ages to get around to doing it.
How
So
did
I think.
it manifest itself then? When you say that you didn't feel you got it from your dad, why? What were the experiences you had?
Well, it was things like my sister getting lots of financial support when she left home. She was given financial support for her nursing, for when she bought a new car or her first car. She lived in a what was called the family home at one stage that my mum and dad bought as an investment property, and there was just no question that my older sister would be the one living there, whereas I didn't get any of that. And when I asked, could you help me out with some money to buy the car? No, I think you need to prove to us that you can raise that yourself. So there was all these different, I just saw it as unfairness type situations and where one person was getting preferential treatment. I did have it told to me by a number of friends of the family would say, we always could see that your older sister was the apple of your dad's eye. And we always thought at the time that he's being a bit rough, by doing that on his other children. And I know my little sister has even more had to come to terms with that because she was basically not only compared to my older sister, but to me. And, why can't you just be like your older sisters? Because I was trying so hard to be liked and accepted, whereas my little sister just went, well, stuff you. If I can't get that, I'm not even going to try. So she just got out and went, no, not interested. So it is interesting that you carry those things with you and you go back to those experiences of what you see as being unjust situations. And if you look at it from both sides of the coin, I'm sure my dad would see them with a completely different set of eyes and different emotions to the way I would.
If you could take something that you feel was positive from that experience, what do you feel you would have got for that's made you who you are today, if you like, that you've got from that experience, which you can reframe as a positive lesson?
Oh, most definitely, don't wait for other people's approval. And you don't need it. You just seriously don't need other people's approval. When I was in Washington recently, I stood and got a photograph with a beautiful statue of Eleanor Roosevelt. And she said famously, the only person that you need to get approval from, basically, is yourself. Yeah, the only person who's got the right to make you feel bad about yourself is you. So don't wait for other people's approval. And I think when I got that breakthrough that I've been working towards for so many years, to not need my dad's approval, it certainly helped me get over needing anybody's approval. I don't care. If you don't like me, you don't like the sound of my voice, you don't like the way I write, you don't like the way I look, it doesn't bother me. Obviously, I'm not right for you. There's lots of millions of other people in the world for you to work with, so that's fine. So yeah, I guess the biggest lesson, it's given me that ability to say, I actually don't care what other people think about me.
Gosh, there's so much there I would love to get into. Gosh, really? Okay. First of all, I just want to go back to something you said a minute ago. I don't think I've yet met an entrepreneur who does not have some form of ADHD. Just want to put that out there. I think every single entrepreneur on the call right now will go, yep, that's me. I know, me. Totally get that.
Yep. Right, objectitis. We've all got it.
Absolutely, yeah. Regards not caring what other people think, that's just such a huge part of what this podcast is actually about, really. It's about trying to encourage people to move out of their comfort zone and to get out there, because the world needs the talents and the skills that we have, you know.
Absolutely.
So let's talk a little bit about self-awareness, Lauren. What I get from you when I talk to you is that you are, and going through that experience, I guess, has probably added to this. You know, going through the experience, having the breakthroughs, you seem very self. You know, I think self-awareness leads to some of your confidence. Please tell me if I'm wrong or right with that. And you do come across as a very self-aware person. First of all, are you? Do you agree with that? Secondly, how important do you think kind of really knowing yourself and being self-aware is in being able to get out there and start and grow your business and brand?
It's a bloody good question, Joe. And it's just very quickly, I think, based on what you just said as well about that ability to not care what other people think about you, I think I need to temper that by just saying, look, you need to care, but instead of letting what other people think about you and say about you get you down and be a negative thing, you need to use it to prop you up. And I think a lot of people worry about what people say about you, especially with this bullying on social media and all these sorts of things that happen. And people are always going to, I know in New Zealand and Australia, we have this thing called tall poppy syndrome, which is the minute the taller poppy pokes its head up, it gets chopped off, you know, and people are very quick when somebody becomes successful. I'm sure you've experienced this, Joe. The more successful you get, the more haters you get, the more knockers you get, the more people having, you know, the bows and arrows just triple and quadruple.
In fact, I always say that if nobody's giving me any hassle on social media, I'm clearly not out there enough.
Correct. So you've got to use it. Yeah. You've got to use that whatever people throw at you, you've got to use it to build yourself up, not let it knock you down. So that's quite a good quote, actually, Joe. I might use that one.
Tweetable.
It's a tweetable, definitely. So I guess self-awareness it's not something I think that you are born with. I think it's something that grows. And certainly it's all of your life experiences. So my living at the camp and having confidence to talk to anybody and being adaptable and this wanting to appeal to my dad and trying to earn his respect and love and realizing later on that actually I didn't need to earn it. He loves me anyway. He's just my dad. He's going to naturally love me automatically. No matter what I say or do, he's always going to love me. So I don't need to try for that. So coming to those outcomes, having really good mindset mentors, I cannot stress enough that if you want to succeed as an entrepreneur with your own business, you need to have really good people around you, really supportive, positive people, be that your family, your friends, paying someone to do it, like a mindset coach or a business coach, somebody you can have alongside you that's on your side, on your team, not necessarily just to dust you off and pat you on the back, or even to agree with you. You just become a sycophant if you've got people surrounding you who just like you because they think you're fantastic. You actually need people to bring you down to earth and say, hey, do you know what? I thought you did that really well, but you probably could do a bit better if you did this. And should never stop yourself being open to other people's ideas. Don't let it be criticism, but let it become something that, again, it builds you up rather than knocking you down. But I think the self-awareness thing, Joe, it didn't come to me easily, and I made my own share of mistakes. It took me 4 years to really nail my personal brand, 4 years, which is just ridiculous. And I talk about this as, I've got a word for it now, I call it ironicide. So it's like the plumber with the leaky tap, or the nurse whose children are always sick, you know, or the web guru whose website looks like rubbish. It's ironic that the thing they should do best, they're actually not that good at. So I call it ironicide. So when it came to building my own personal brand, I was crap at that. I made some really stupid decisions. Again, it was all about appearance. It was about how could I spin this? How could I attract as many people as possible? How could I be liked? All these sorts of things. And I had a really good coach who at the time said to me, hang on a minute, is this really you? Is this authentic? And I went, well, not really. I went, well, it's not going to work, is it? So I had to, I had a brand, I had all the stuff going on. I'd recorded all sorts of stuff for my online program. It was all branded up. And I basically had to burn it all and start from scratch. It was heartbreaking. There were lots of tears. There was lots of frustration, but I had to start again. Mm. So I guess the nicest thing is now, as a personal branding specialist, I've got the luxury of looking at other people's brands from the outside in, and I can be that step advanced from where you are. So I guess when it comes to self-awareness, Jo, the lesson I guess I'm trying to share with this from my experience is you need to have somebody with you who's a step away, at arm's length from what's going on, to help guide you through. Not necessarily telling you what to do, but drawing the best out of you.
How often do we say, I mean, I think the amount of times in my life I've said, you know, I'm so much better at telling other people to do what I can't do myself, you know?
So I can, I'm on the side. Yeah,
I can give such great advice of what other people can do, but can I actually follow it myself is the question, yeah. You know? So regards self-awareness, I've read lots and lots of articles and heard lots of different people's opinions on this over the years, and there's definitely differing opinions on this. Do you think that once you become aware, for instance, of your strengths and weaknesses, and I know what my opinion is, but I'd like to hear yours, do you think that people should be trying to improve their weaknesses or focusing on their strengths?
I think they should focus on their strengths. I think I certainly, I mean, I know when I talked about now my consciousness around the personal communication styles has certainly enabled me to be more engaging with all sorts of different people compared to just being an eagle and going, I'll stuff the lot of you, I'm just going to get on and do what I do. That's not what I mean. What I mean is just be really focused on doing what you do best. And if you can't do something, outsource it. Get somebody else to do it for you. Really, I think it's probably a bigger, stronger step to take, isn't it, Joe, to admit that you can't do something and get somebody else to do it for you than trying to do everything and being crap at it.
Absolutely, yeah. I 100% agree.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to switch gears slightly here, and I'm going to ask you a very big question. This is a huge question that could take hours to answer. But I just want to see where we go with it. Do you think that women in general suffer more from a kind of a lack of confidence, a lack of not willingness, but greater fear levels attached to moving out of their comfort zone than men?
Man, that is a big question. Mm. And I'll probably get myself into big, deep trouble here. I'm going to answer that with a yes and a no, because I think the answer is when it comes to being an entrepreneur and running a business, definitely yes. I think women are at a disadvantage, and there's a number of reasons for that. And I've got a lot of amazing women friends who work in this particular area where women are being asked to be entrepreneurs and business people in a structure and a culture that has predominantly been built by and is run by men. And we don't measure up. And we don't measure up because we're not actually made the same way. Our brains don't work the same way. Physiologically, we're not the same. We don't have the same approach as men do to business. Men's brains are quite different from women's brains. So a man's brain is very compartmentalized. You can go and watch it. I should share with you the link. There's a brilliant presentation. I can't remember the guy's name, Mark. Oh, it'll come to me. And he talks about the difference between men's and women's brain. He talks about the men's brain being all made up of different boxes. And the rules are you can only touch one box at a time. So there's a box for the car, a box for the business, a box for the wife, a box for the kids, a box for the mother-in-law somewhere in the basement, you know, all the sort of stuff. It's quite funny, this link. I'll send it to you so you can share it. Yep. But he talks about a man's brain being very compartmentalized. You deal with one thing at a time. So if you're in business and you talk to a client and you have a bit of a ding-dong row with them, or there's a problem with the job, or they haven't paid their invoice, or there's a mistake that's been made, that'll be part of that. And then you'll hang up the phone and you'll email them or talk to them later. Hey, Bill, great to talk to you before. Do you want to play golf? Are we all right for golf on the weekend? Because golf's a completely different box.
Yep.
So they can separate business from emotion and the feeling of wanting to have approval and mateship and all those other things, and they can separate that out very, very easy. Women's brains, everything's connected to everything. It's like a browser window with 14 million windows open. You know? So if somebody annoys you or frustrates you or doesn't pay their bill or whatever, all of a sudden it's like, I can't deal with this person anymore. I'm going to just cut you off at the knees and I'm never going to talk to you again, even though you might have been a lifelong friend for years. So I think women find it harder to do business in a male-orientated world because we just aren't built that way and we're not as confident in that realm.
Yeah, I think gosh, don't you think that sometimes if women just remained acting like women as opposed to trying to act like a man, they'd actually get a lot further?
Yeah, absolutely. Because in terms of comfort zone, women push themselves out of their comfort zone constantly. I mean, seriously, women, you get pregnant. How amazingly out of your comfort zone is that? Your body is not your own when you have a baby. I mean, you and I have both got children, Joe. It's a completely out of your comfort zone situation. Yet women, we can do it without hardly trying.
Yeah.
So we push ourselves out of our comfort zone constantly. Just the bare basics. How many, if you're on the call and you're listening to this podcast and you've got a spouse or a partner or a husband and you're the person in the family who organizes what on earth do we have for dinner tonight? Now, this is something that's always made me laugh, because whenever I've worked with male coaches or male mentors, it's always pissed me off that you get to the end of these sorts of calls and they go, oh, I have to go now because my wife's calling me for dinner. And it's like, asshole, I'm the one that's going to stop this call, get out of this brilliant comfort zone, well, not creative zone I've been in with you to do this amazing mentor. I've got loads of notes I could get on to do stuff, but I've got to leave the desk, go to the kitchen and figure out what on earth we're going to have for dinner tonight. So do you know what I mean?
You need to train your husband a bit more.
I do, obviously. He's quite a good cook when he can be asked, but then he makes lots of dishes, so it's a pain in the bum. But I think women, we naturally push ourselves out of our comfort zones. We're the nurturers. We're the ones who have to cry with our kids and smile when things are not that easy and just be the fortress that holds everything together. We have to be incredibly strong. Why can't we be seen to just do that in business? Why can't you just be, like you said, just be yourself in business? Don't try to conform to somebody else's idea of what a Gary Vaynerchuk, Richard Branson type entrepreneur should be.
Absolutely. No, I'm 100% with you there, Lauren. All right. So that's such a huge subject. We could talk about that for hours, but I want to, yeah, I know. We might come back to it later in the call, actually.
It's a bit unfair, isn't it? I always think it's, here's the Libran coming out in me. It's all unfair that the female businesswomen who get out there and push themselves, if they're too pushy, they're a bitch. Whereas Gary Vaynerchuk can go out there and swear black and blue and do all these sorts of things and people adore him for it. It's unfair.
Did you know there's some kind of study, and I can't remember what the study was now, so I'm just reaching into the echelons of my brain just to remember bits and pieces of the details. But there's some kind of study that actually says that if a woman goes out there and behaves like a man, so in other words, you know, walks into an office and says, I want a promotion or I want more money, or, you know, rules her team, for instance, in a similar way to a man would run his team with, you know, complete directness and all that kind of stuff, that it would actually lead to, you know, less results. She would not, yes, if she went out and tried to act like a guy, she would not get the same results as a guy, because it's just not, people wouldn't like it. You know, they would struggle with the fact that she was acting like that. Whereas if a woman acts like a woman, which is where we're so good at nurturing relationships and we're so good at, you know, at creating rapport and all of that kind of stuff, then we're going to get much better results. But anyway, that comes down to those personality traits, doesn't it, you talk about.
But it's still unfair, Joe, that as a speaker, and I've spoken all over the place, I get judged on what I'm wearing and how I look and what my voice sounds like.
Yeah.
You know, that's the unfortunate side of things, I believe, is that there's, because of the way the culture is, women get judged on appearances way more than men. And you can see that. Just look at Hollywood. Mm. Look at how Hollywood actresses have to look absolutely gorgeous and glamorous. And the guys can grow beards, have stubble, you know, gain a bit of weight, whatever, and no one seems to care. They can have young blonde bimbo girlfriends, and that's fine. But the minute someone like Susan Sarandon has Tim Robbins, who's way younger than her, oh my goodness, she's a cradle snatcher. You know, so it's just, it does rile me a little bit that there's that bit of inequality around appearances. And from a personal branding point of view, it makes it really hard, I think, on a lot of women to be authentic and be themselves and not care about what people say about how they look and how they sound and their appearances.
It's an age-old cultural situation that I think is going to take a long time to change, but that I think we are making huge strides.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
I really do feel, and it is. It's like a massive, great, old, huge tanker ship that you're slowly turning. You know.
Yeah.
You
talked about this before, didn't you? In the fact that you had concerns and fears about doing too many videos and things until you've lost a bit of weight, or you know, I always talk about don't go on camera unless I've got my eye makeup on, or you know, all these things that we. Isn't it odd that we pick on ourselves, that women tend to have a crack at ourselves without any real reason to do so? No one's out in the big wide world saying, oh my God, Lauren, when you don't put eye makeup on, you look really, really dreadful, like tired and worn. No one's saying that, but you think it.
But you've come a big old loop back there, though, haven't you, to not worrying about what other people think about you?
You have, but it is that itty-bitty shitty committee inside your own brain that you've got to battle with all the time.
Oh, that's a tweetable. That's a tweetable. The itty-bitty shitty committee in your own brain. I like that. So, Lauren, talk to us. Let's talk about purpose. I want to get on to a chat about purpose because purpose is really close to my heart right now because that's how this whole podcast has come about. You were saying earlier in the episode that it took you 4 years to come up with your personal brand, and I'm sitting here listening to you thinking, well, that's fantastic because I've been at it since 2010, and we're now in 2018. I really feel actually that I have only just discovered what my true purpose, and I'm so incredibly excited and passionate about where this is going to go. So talk to us about the true north. Talk to us about that whole concept. I love it. I love the exercises you do in your book. You and I have done it before together. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful exercise. So have a chat about what it is, why it's important, and what do we do to really discover and identify our true north?
Yeah, absolutely. And just as a quick aside, Joe, I actually saw your purpose in you a long time ago, but you had to find it yourself. It's funny, isn't it? You've got to sort of lead people down a track, but your whole purpose around – you've always been incredibly generous and really passionate about helping other people become true entrepreneurs. I think the fact that you've really nailed that with helping women – to really stand up and having a massive impact on the world and doing it in such a way that it's sustainable is just a natural channel for you to go down, which is awesome. So it's a culmination, I think, isn't it, of a lifelong direction that you've now pulled together, which is really brilliant. So the true north, I love diagrams. I always have. I prefer, because I'm dyslexic. I was told that I had word blindness when I was about 8 years old and I'd never be able to read or write properly like the other kids did, which sounds like a horrible thing for a teacher to say, but he knew that whatever he said, I'd prove him wrong. It was negative psychology, and I love that sort of way of working. So I love diagrams because they're easy for people to understand and to remember and put it into practice, because one of the key things I stand for is taking action. It's all great to listen to podcasts and read books, but unless you take action, nothing's going to change. So I came up with the True North as a way of explaining how you can package together all of your natural skills and talents and expertise and experience into one standout, purposeful personal brand that's got direction. When I grew up in the bush, I was a girl guide and all those sorts of things. And at school, we did something called orienteering, which I loved the map and compass, but the running part wasn't my favorite, but the map and compass, but I really liked. So when I thought back to my childhood and what it was, when we lived in the bush, people would get lost really easy in New Zealand. It was quite thick bush, and they could be meters away from the path and be disorientated and lost. And it's exactly the same when you're growing your own business as an entrepreneur. Every 5 minutes, you've got to be doing LinkedIn or posting on social media. You need to be reading books and getting out there speaking and creating programs. All these things all happen. And it just is so confusing now. I think the human brain in the 70s was being hit with about 500 branded messages. Today it's closer to 5,000. Wow. So it's an incredibly overwhelming world that we live in. And to start your own business as an entrepreneur, it's just really, really confusing. So you can get lost really quickly and you end up doing what I call WOFTAM marketing, yeah? W-O-F-T-A-M, a waste of flipping time and money. And you end up just doing knee-jerk reaction marketing. And it doesn't work. It costs you money, costs you time. You don't get return on investment. And then you go, this is too hard. I'm just going to go back and get a job. And I guess that comes down to my purpose. My whole purpose for doing what I do is I see so many professional service providers not earning enough, not being focused enough to become the go-to expert. And they are struggling because they're just trying to be everything to everyone. It's the dance of the desperate. And every time someone says to them, oh, you know what, you should be on radio, they go, oh, sure, okay, I'll do that. And they waste more money and time. So the true north is really about giving yourself a compass. Because when you're orienteering, there's two things you've got. You've got a map and a compass. If you think of the map as your marketing action plan, this is the way you can find out where your target audience is, where your competitors are, what channels you could use to reach them, what media is out there. It's a marketing action plan, your map. On its own, it's hopeless. If you don't know where you are on that map, you might as well burn it. It's pointless having it. It's a waste of time and money. The other thing is your compass. And all a compass does is points at true north. In fact, it doesn't point at true north. That's a scientific whole other conversation we'd have. It points at north, let's say. And that's all it does. But if you're lost and you don't know who your target audience is, you don't know what your unique point of difference is, you don't know how to explain to people what you do, you don't have any idea how you're going to get yourself out there, it's pointless just having a brand. So if you can think about it, that if you put the two of them together, and if you've done orienteering, you'll know how it works. You get your map, you lie it down in the direction that the compass points, so you know you're going the right way, and you go, right, this is where we came in, this is where we ended up. I think we need to go this way and we'll be safe. So when I talk about your true north, you need to find your compass, your way of directing you, so that you don't get distracted by that bright, shiny objectitis and that dance of the desperate to try and help everybody and do everything and waste your time and money. So if you're listening to the podcast and you've got a pen and paper handy, if you're listening to it in the car, I suggest maybe go back and re-listen to this when you're somewhere safe, you can draw. If you draw a compass on a pad in front of you, which has got north at the top, west on the left, east on the right, and south at the bottom, there's a process you can go through to go round that compass. Start at west, which is what is the problem that you solve. So for an example, if you're an accountant, you might decide the problem I solve is helping people have cash flow. Well, that's actually just part of what you do. The real problem you solve is what happens when people have good cash flow in their business. All of a sudden, they can live a life. They know where their money's at. They know that they can pay their bills. It takes away that stress. If you're a personal trainer, you might say, well, the problem I solve is people who are unfit and overweight. Well, that's just what you do. The real problem that you solve is people now can fit into the clothes that they love. They look in the mirror and they feel great. They get more confidence and they just feel fantastic. They've got energy. They've got their life back. So when you go to West, you've really got to think about what's the problem that you solve, not what you do, but what's the way that you transform people's lives. So think about that with what's the problem you solve. Then go to East, which stands for execution. This is the how. Now you can talk about, so what's the specific way that you do what you do? And if you've been in business or doing something as an expert or in a particular marketplace or a particular industry for 5 years or longer, chances are you do stuff without even thinking about it. And you just assume everybody knows how to sell a house or start a business or mentor and coach people, and they don't. So you really need to think about what are the ways that you do things, that you do them with ease. I talk about expertise as being the things you do with ease that other people find difficult. That's why it's called expert ease. So when you're talking about how you do stuff, there'll be a certain methodology and lots of my clients tend to write this down in terms of a numbered list. Well, first of all, I do this with the client, then this and so on. And that often you get way down the list and you go, hang on a minute, there's some stuff in there I'd forgotten that I did. So you really need to talk about how you do something a certain way that other people don't do, because that's your standout point of difference in the marketplace. Then go to South. South's really easy. Just draw a line through the S and make it a dollar sign. This is all about your value. It's all about the way that you transform people's lives and what they get out of it. When they want Jeff Bezos, who started Amazon, talks about personal branding being what people say about you when you're not in the room. Now, value is all about that. The most valuable currency on the planet at the moment, I believe, is time. People don't have enough time, and they want to know that they can trust that you're going to deliver what you promise. So it's all about painting a picture of the outcome, talking about transforming people. What's the real value that you're going to add to someone's life if they are using your services or using you as a business specialist? What are you doing, and how do you put that value across with guarantees or awards or credentials or referrals or testimonials or any way you can use to explain the value that people are going to get from working with you? And then last, go to North. And North is all about your true north. This is your purpose and your passion. This is what we talked about before, Joe. The reason you've got this definition is because you've now got this purpose, this passion for doing what you're doing. You've always been incredibly generous. You've always been interested in entrepreneurs. You've always been wanting to help people start something that's bigger than them. Now you've got that purpose and that passion that runs alongside it, and it's all coming together. So that's the true north. It's really an exercise that you can do, that you can go through what the solution, what the problem is that you solve, how you do it uniquely, what's the value that you deliver, and why do you want to do it? Why are you so passionate about helping people get this result?
Can I just, I'm just going to link everything you've just said there, though, back to confidence as well, Lauren, because
yes.
You quote in the book, Jim Rohn, a man without purpose is lost. Yeah. And I, when I used to want to do my videos or, you know, get on Facebook Live or whatever, something would always stop me. I'd always sort of have this inner self-doubt. And I love revealing this, because I think people sometimes watch others like yourself, like me, like other people, and think, oh, they've got it all. They're so confident. They're so, you know, they know where they're going. They know what they're doing. They've got all their ducks in a row, blah, blah, blah. And most of the time we haven't, you know, we're stumbling along just like everybody else. And, yep. There were so many times when I would be so full of self-doubt and I wouldn't do it. And with this new purpose, with a purpose comes confidence. All of a sudden, when you are so 100% convinced that what you're doing is absolutely what you should be doing, then you will sing it. You will sing it from the rooftops, won't you? You will go out and tell everybody, and you will have so much more confidence to get out there on social media or write that blog post or record that podcast or do that Facebook Live video or ring that client that you need to ring or tell your family and friends what you're doing, because you're so passionate and you believe so much in what you're doing that it creates the confidence for you to get out there and tell everybody about it, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. The only person you need to convince that you're good enough is yourself. That's it. You don't need to convince anybody else. But what I like about what you said, Joe, is you always have your down days. Like you say, everybody's comparing themselves to others, and everything you see on social media, of course, is true, according to Abraham Lincoln. but, you know, I think you're right. The nicest thing about having a purpose is it does two things. It removes you from the picture. It makes your purpose bigger than you. It makes your impact and your influence and the goals that you're setting more about your impact on other people's lives and what you can do for others than about creating something for yourself, which is awesome, because then all of a sudden you can get out of your own way. And the other thing that it does when you've got a really clearly defined purpose is you can, and the only reason I'm saying this is because it's what my clients have told me that they've got, is they've got the ability to live their brand. They don't have any feeling like it's a fake. They feel really authentic. They feel energized, incredibly confident. But more importantly, they, like you said, they've got this purpose now that is leading them forwards, and almost instead of pushing yourself forwards, you're being dragged forwards by this amazing purpose, and you can just live it. You don't need to worry about trying to create something that isn't there. I really dislike that saying, fake it till you make it. I'd rather you get purpose and passion and that leads you forwards, because we're living in the world of authenticity. People want to know, like and trust you before they're going to do any business with you or buy into your ideas or follow you. I think Simon Sinek said, you know, people believe what you believe. They like you because of the confidence that you've got and the purpose and the passion that you have. That's what they buy into. And I think you're right, Joe. The minute that happens, you step out of your own way.
So is that what, do you think that that's what's guiding you? Because something that's always impressed me with you, Lauren, over the last few years is you have absolutely no qualms about just getting yourself out there. I mean, you will rock up at networking events, you'll chat
to people.
Well, apparently
I'm very popular on porn, you know.
I just want you to know, as much as I love you, darling, I'm not going to be looking out for that video.
I wouldn't go there either.
But you, I mean, you put yourself forward for all different kind of things. You put yourself forward for speaking gigs and, you know, for interviews, and you'll just get out there. I mean, you will literally just get out there and tell everybody what you do and how you do it. And, you know, you'll record your Facebook videos and you just... doing your thing. So what do you think leads to that kind of confidence?
I think a lot of it is really getting over any sort of fear. Now, I would call myself fearless. I don't know how I got that. I don't know whether it's something you can teach somebody, but I've never been afraid of doing anything, even as a kid. If somebody said to me, you've got to go and stand on stage tomorrow and talk to 50,000 people, I would do it. And I'd probably shake and I'd have a few sweats and a few deep breaths, but I would do it. I think I've never been afraid of the consequences. I don't know where that's come from, Joe. I'm not a particularly spiritual person, but I do believe that you've got this one life to make an impact. And if I come back reincarnated as somebody else, that's fantastic. But do you know what I mean? I think I've always had this, not a sense of impending doom, but a sense of you've got to make the best of the time that you've got. You cannot get to the end of your life and look back with regret and say, oh, I just wish I'd stepped out more. I wished I'd take more risks. I wished I'd pushed myself harder. You can't do that. You can't get to the end of your life and wish. You've got to just whatever. And I'm a big sailor. I love sailing. And I remember someone once saying to me on a, I think it was a Thursday afternoon, oh, look, we're sailing from England to France on the weekend. Do you want to come with us? And I said, yeah, sure. And they said, great. You know, and I said, I'll just have to organize with my boss, get my passport and all that. Do you know what I mean? But I'm coming, you know. I don't know, Joe, whether you can teach that. I know you can teach people to find their purpose, and you can teach people to, and you can coach them, because I've had great mindset coaches, to overcome all sorts of ways that you hold yourself back. I don't know if you can teach fearlessness. I think it's one of those things you've got to live. You've got to start. It's that saying, isn't it? Throw yourself off the cliff and learn how to fly on the way down.
Yeah, absolutely. Just so that we can, you know, super encourage people listening to this, it may not be teachable, but it's totally doable.
Yeah.
You know, and it's doable through action, right? I mean, the more you do something, the more you push yourself out of your comfort zone and do something, then the more you realise that it was never as bad as you thought it was going to be.
Correct. You know, and you look back and you go, oh, I survived. And it was actually all right. Yeah. And don't get me wrong, Joe, all of us have doubt. I mean, definitely. I have issues with depression. I have times where I think, God, you know, I can't do this. I'm never going to get where I want. It's frustrating. Why isn't it happening faster than it should be? You know, everybody has that. But I think it's not just a case of, you know, grin and bear it. It's a case of deciding, what is it that you want to create this purposeful life for, and just going after it rather than being distracted by what do people think of me, all these other things that might be going on. Just decide. And I think you're right, Joe. It comes when you have a purpose and a passion and a real drive that's bigger than you, because then all of a sudden it doesn't matter and you can just go, right, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. If I fail, it's not a failure. It's a learning.
What do you think is a belief that you've picked up over the last few years that's had a really positive impact on your life?
A belief. I think it's funny, actually. I've never had any struggles with self-belief, although I have had moments, as I say, depression's always been part of. I had postnatal depression after I had my baby years ago, and it's always been in the back of my mind. And every now and again, that, you know, that black dog appears, and I have different ways of dealing with it, which is awesome. I think the bigger belief that I've learnt over the years is the ability for others, if you give them the right tools and the right direction, to be able to surprise the shit out of you. Because so often, especially, I mean, I'm a branding coach and a mentor, and often you so passionately want things for people, but unless they want it for themselves, it's never going to happen. And I think that belief has got to be in the quality of the guidance and the training and the tools that you can give to people to be a better person. If you can believe that you've got something that's actually pretty okay, then you've got to leave it up to the people you're working with to take it on board and do it. You can't master their own destiny. But if you've got a belief in the process and the natural skills and talents that you have, then you can just go, right, fantastic, I've got belief in this. I can therefore believe that as long as other people do that, they're going to be fine and they're going to be okay. And if they choose not to do it and not to do the training and not to go through the process, then that's the choice they make. It's not something that I can force.
I just want to ask you, I'm just going to delve a little bit deeper into your black dog, because because I think lots of people would empathize with that. And I certainly, up until a couple of years ago when I completely changed my lifestyle, certainly had what I used to call my black days. Which would just sort of wipe me out for a day or two, you know, where you would just sort of fall into this sort of abyss of what I used to call my pity parties. what are some of your strategies for dealing with that?
It could be your itty bitty pity party with the itty bitty shitty committee. My strategies are, I mean, obviously the first thing is to identify it for what it is, and picking up the signals when you're feeling that way. For many years now, before I get out of bed, I think of all the things I can be grateful for. And if I'm really struggling on a day, I'll make sure I think of 10. But there's at least a couple every morning where I wake up and go, oh my goodness, I am alive, I'm breathing. You know, it's another great day. I've got an amazing family, amazing stuff that I do. I'm really passionate about everything I do. All these things. I've got food in the cupboard, you know. That's definitely something. I think being grateful and either having a gratitude diary or making yourself think of something you're grateful for before you put your feet on the ground every day, certainly been a tool and a process I've been using for many years to help me. And again, having really good support, having the people around you that you can be really open and honest with and say, look, I'm having my own little pity party here. I don't need you to save me. I just need you to be there to listen to me and hear me out. And, you know, I don't want to be fixed, but I just need some support at the moment to deal with that. And it's funny, Joe, especially when you're starting your own business, I think people tend to overestimate what they can do in the short term and really not look at the big picture in the longer. I mean, it's going to take you 3 years to get to a point where your personal brand is well known to the point that people are asking to interview you, that the media are looking at you as an expert, that somebody wants to have you speak on stage or in front of their group or whatever else. So I think, that it is a process. Everyone to their own. I think every person has got to have an individual way of doing it, but gratitude has been a big way of mastering depression and the black days that you could have. Did that answer your question?
Yes. Yeah. I'm just exploring to see what strategies there are, because I do think people are affected, you know, by even if it's not full on depression, by self doubt, down days,
absolutely,
feeling low, feeling sad, anxious. Yep. I think anxiousness is probably a big one. Which again, I mean, there's such a pattern running through this podcast, Lauren. Again, a lot of anxiousness comes from worrying about what other people are thinking about you.
Absolutely. And comparing yourself to others, looking at all these people being amazingly successful. Facebook, people only post positive stuff on Facebook. Very rarely do they post what's really going on. So, you know, and in reality, it's nobody's business but your own, what you're going through. You need to find your own way to support yourself.
What do you think about this whole be vulnerable on social media, share what's happening with you, you know, what is it Gary Vaynerchuk always talks about, document, don't create or whatever, just get out there and share your life. People want to know what's going on in your life. What do you think about that whole kind of opening yourself up and being completely vulnerable on social media?
I don't know about being vulnerable. I agree with being authentic. And I've got to agree with Gary in the fact that every time I've written anything that's personal about what's going on, that gets a huge amount of engagement. Because you're right, people want to know. It's that part of the brain that wants to know about gossip. And, you know, the reason why we can't look away from a road accident when we drive past, you know, it's the reason why when recently I asked people for, you know, which one of these two covers should I have for my book? And everyone went, oh, there's a brain on there. And I chose the one that everyone went, oh, don't like that, because it made people notice, made people look. So it's interesting. I think the vulnerability is a hard one, because you need to be a real person for sure. We're living in the age of the authentic brand. People want to know who they're dealing with. But at the same time, it's quite obvious when you see people post stuff and all they want is a response. All they want is to get someone to say, oh, poor you, or oh, what's wrong? You know, it really annoys me when somebody posts these just one sentence that says, oh, my God, you won't believe what happened. You know, it's clickbait. That's not real. That is created. So there's a fine line, I think, Joe, between being authentic and being vulnerable because you want some attention. And I think you've got to be careful not to cross that.
Okay, so tell us, Lauren, what is something practical that business owners could go and do right now to improve their personal brand?
To do with confidence or to do with just anything to do with their personal brand?
Anything you think that would be a super practical and easy exercise that a business yep. owner could do right this minute, go out right now and improve their brand.
So the number one thing any entrepreneur can do if they really want to get themselves out there and grow a standout personal brand is decide. Take a moment to decide what is it you want to be well known, well paid and wanted for. Make a decision, draw a line in the sand and just get really zero focused on what is it that you want to be the number one go-to person for. What's that number one thing that you want to make people remember you for? All the big brands around the world are absolutely laser focused. Nike, it's all about getting out there and running a marathon. Just do it. You know, everything packaged into one brand. Coca-Cola, McDonald's, all of these brands, even the personal brands, Gary Vaynerchuk and so on, they are laser focused on what they want to be known for. And that's what you need to decide. If you can spend maybe a little bit of time working that out, what is it that you want to be well known, well paid and wanted for? That will create so much clarity for what you've got to do before you go and do it. There's that lovely saying, you know, people don't like that whole idea of ready, fire, ready, aim, fire. And they reckon a lot of business coaches say, no, it should just be fire, ready, aim. You know, just get out there and fire. When you're an entrepreneur and growing a business, you don't have endless bullets. You don't have endless time and budget to spend on getting yourself out there. I actually believe that needs to start with aim. Aim first, then fire, and then figure out if you're ready. Don't wait till it's perfect. Just get it done. But make sure you've got clear direction and some clarity before you start firing off in all directions.
Very good. And how do you feel, Lauren, that the work you're doing now is having a positive impact on the world?
I said this actually in my acceptance speech when I picked up my International Stevie Award in New York last year. We had 30 seconds for our acceptance speech, and I actually had one of the waiters came up at the end of the night and said to me, you know, your acceptance speech was amazing, and I am so driven. It's really excited me about what I should be doing. And I went, oh, my God, it was 30 seconds.
Brilliant.
So in my acceptance speech, I said that what I'm doing is positively impacting the lives of so many entrepreneurs around the world, because they have these unique gifts and talents that the world deserves to hear. If you're not getting out there sharing these, as you said at the very start of this interview, sharing your natural gifts and talents with the world, you're doing the world a disservice. And the world needs entrepreneurs. It is so different. Even looking at our education system, years ago it was reading, writing, arithmetic, and then music and the arts and language. Nowadays, it's not. The world needs creators. It needs independent thinkers. It needs entrepreneurs. It needs that creativity and that passion and purpose that can only come from you getting really focused on your natural skills and talents and the difference you can make in the world. before it needs the people who can build it and put the algorithms behind it and the clever people who can count and read and write and all those other things. So I think the big thing that I'm really loving with what I do is that impact I have around helping people get really clear on what they want their legacy to be, what they want to stand out for, and then figuring out how to do it.
Wonderful. All right, Lauren, I'm going to ask you this, this what I think is a wonderful question. I'm going to get you thinking now. I know that you have a beautiful daughter who is very quickly turning from a child to an adult as we speak in front of your very eyes. What's the one biggest message, the one really big message that you want to impart to your daughter, that you want her to really know and understand as she grows up?
For my daughter specifically, it would be a twin message, if you like. One is you are good enough, which I'd give to any, certainly any girl growing up in life based on my own experience. You are good enough. But the big thing I'd like to leave for my daughter is get it done. Because I think you said it as well, Jo, so many times we go to do something and we hold ourselves back. And I do believe that there's amazing gifts and talents inside this extraordinary young person, and she just needs to get it done. And I think the reason she's holding herself back is she's worried again, what will people think of that book that she's writing, or that blog that she's thinking of doing? What will people think of it? And she's concerned about other people's opinions. Therefore, she's procrastinating and not getting it done. So that would be my message for my daughter, is just get it done. And it is good enough. You don't need to worry about that.
There's a real pattern through this. I feel like the title for this podcast should be Stop Worrying About What Others Think About You. I feel that's been a huge sort of theme underlying this entire podcast.
Absolutely.
Lauren, go on.
What other people think about you is none of your business.
Yeah. What is it my mum used to say? Those who matter don't mind, and those who mind don't matter.
Don't matter, absolutely.
Lauren, any parting thoughts?
I don't think so. I mean, the big thing, I guess, is, look, I sound confident. I come across as incredibly, you know, loads of confidence, no fear, all that sort of things. And that could be true. It's something I've been blessed to be born with. I don't know how I do it. I'm pretty sure I've got ADHD. I know I've got dyslexia, so I'm certainly not perfect. But the big thing I think that I'd like to leave people with is to stop comparing yourself to others. Don't try to be Lauren or try to be Joe or try to be anybody. Just be you. Just be the best you can be. Don't try to be somebody else, because it's never going to work. I'm already taken. You can't, thank goodness, according to my husband, they broke the mold, because he could only put up with one of me for so long. But just be you. Don't try to be somebody else. Don't even try to be like someone else. Just be you.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Lauren, as always. You can find Lauren at ultimatebusinesspropeller.com. ultimatebusinesspropeller.com, but I will obviously put a link to Lauren's website and to her book. And she's also got some great exercises, so the True North exercise and the personal communication style exercise and things like that. And you can do various tests online at her website to see what your communication style is like and all that kind of stuff. So I'll put all those links anyway in the show notes for the podcast. But it's been great, Lauren. We might have to have a part two.
It's been brilliant, Joe. It's always a brilliant time chatting with you. I know we could talk for hours. I'm just hopeful that some of the stuff we covered off today has been really helpful for people.
Oh, without a doubt. It's been super, super inspirational. So everybody who's listening, thanks for listening. And now it's time to take action, get out there, build a business and change the world. Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. To join in the conversation, please head over to joebarnesonline.com, where you can find links to podcasts, show notes, and sign up to download my free ebook, How to Build a Business You Can Run from Anywhere in the World. If you have a moment, please subscribe and quickly rate this podcast. I'm not sure where you're listening to this, but if you happen to be on iTunes, it literally takes a tenth of a second to hit the little stars, and your rating will ensure it gets out to more people and impacts as many as possible. Lastly, I'm super passionate about creating a movement of philanthropic investors. So please head over to joebarnesonline.com/microangel to find out more about how you can become a micro angel and with just $25 impact thousands of women and children who desperately need our help. Thank you so much. I do hope you've enjoyed today's episode. See you on the next podcast. And in the meantime, get out there and make life happen.